Coming up on Golf Today, the Masters champion, the Grand Slam winner, Rory McIlroy, meets the media ahead of his title defense in New Orleans with Shane Lowry. How was the celebration? What trophy does he want now? It's all ahead on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
And we are on the eve of the first women's major of the year, the Chevron Championship at the club at Carlton Woods in the suburbs of Houston, Texas. World number one Nelly Korda is the defending champ, and we've got reports throughout the next couple of hours. This is Golf Today on a Wednesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine. There is weather in Houston, Texas, Eamon, affecting the preparation for this first major championship.
Just proves that the pathway to major championship success is never easy, because you also have to bear in mind a lot of the field competed in LA on the LPGA Tour over the weekend. Maybe Monday was a travel day, gets in some work Tuesday, but suddenly the day before a major championship, that's a bad day to lose. I mean, at least we had a washout at the Masters, but at least that was on Monday.
Yeah.
There was a day and a half for folks to catch up after that before the course closed for the par three contest.
Yes.
At Augusta National. These players here don't actually have that luxury. They're heading out there tomorrow in a major championship play coming off a day that doesn't look as though it's going to give them any opportunity to work.
Mm. Speaking of Augusta National, let's look back at the first men's major of 2025. Been a little over a week since Rory McIlroy took the golf world on that roller coaster ride, winning the Masters to complete the career Grand Slam. Just the sixth man to do so. And after a week spent celebrating and visiting family in Northern Ireland, Rory is back in action after skipping the RBC Heritage last week. So let's remind you of the elite group that Rory joined, in case you need a reminder. It took Rory 11 attempts to do it. There you see Sarazen, Hogan, Player, Nicklaus, and Tiger. And those 11 attempts, the most by far.
Well, Shane Lowry was there waiting for McIlroy after that win at Augusta. Later, he posted on social media, "I've never been happier to watch someone else achieve something that I want so badly myself. Rory deserves every bit of this, and I was so happy to be there to watch him make history." Well, that's the duo that last year won this week's event, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, in their tournament debut. Now, no team has successfully defended their title at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans since the team format was introduced in 2017. Earlier this morning, Lowry and McIlroy met the media.
It's been an amazing few days after, and to be able to reflect on it and, you know, everything that happened and the magnitude of everything. And, you know, I think that the big thing for me is just how, you know, the whole journey sort of resonated with people, and, you know, the people that have reached out to me. And, you know, that's been absolutely amazing. So, yeah, look, it's not every day you get to fulfill one of your lifelong goals and dreams, and you know, I've just really tried to, you know, enjoy everything that comes along with that. As you can hear, I've picked up a bit of a cold on the way, so feeling a little bit under the weather. But you know, obviously, I'm, you know, it's been an amazing few days, but I'm excited and happy to be here with my man, and you know, we're looking forward to a great week, and I'm trying to defend.
Yeah, Roy, you mentioned earlier about how so many people connected with you, about how your journey's resonated. Could you expand on that a little bit? And also, I assume some of those were maybe even beyond golf, some of those instances?
Yeah, very much beyond golf. I spoke to two presidents the day after, which was pretty cool. You know, just people reaching out from all walks of life, whether it be, yeah, sports, entertainment, culture, like just all of it. Just, yeah, I, you know, people that you would never even think that would watch golf or would know, you know, what's going on. You know, that was very, very humbling, I guess. But yeah, I think it's, you know, people can, you know, I think people can see themselves in the struggle at times, and you know, everything that, you know, you sort of try to put into getting the best out of yourself in that journey. And I think people watching, you know, someone finally, you know, get it done, you know, something they've been trying to do for a decade plus, I, you know, that's why I said I think it resonated with a lot of people. I do think that, the whole day on Sunday at Augusta, I don't think I'll have to ever play a harder round of golf in my life. You know, I certainly don't want to be placed back on that 15th tee box on that Sunday afternoon. So I think that to be able to get through that and produce the shots when I needed to, that obviously gives me confidence, and you know, I can always draw back on that experience.
Rory, I'd imagine a couple of the big goals that you may have sort of formally set out for yourself at the beginning of the season have now been checked off. At some point this year, or will you wait maybe till the end of the year to sort of reestablish what goals you would have for the remainder of 2025? And Shane, I feel bad because you haven't done a whole lot of talking. What are some of your...
Okay, I knew, like, I've actually got more questions than I thought I was going to get.
But you're also going to be defending champion at when we go back to Port Rush. What are some of your goals as well throughout the rest of 2025?
I think Rory's probably, his goals are, who cares anymore? He's got the, you know,
I care.
He can, he can take it easy for a while. But no, going back to Port Rush is going to be incredible. I mean, Rory going back as a Masters champion now is kind of going to take a little bit of heat off me again, so I'm pretty happy with that. It's going to be a great tournament. I think, look, I seen something yesterday where I think 278,000 people are going to attend the Open this year at Port Rush. I think 1 million people applied for tickets. It's going to be an incredible event, and I'm just going to be happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, goals. I think one shared goal that we both have is winning at Bethpage. That's, you know, that would be an unbelievable way to cap off the year. The one thing I feel like what helped me to get over the line at Augusta was really trying to focus on, you know, I've said, you know, I've talked, and we both work with Bob Rutella, but, you know, basically the one thing I try to do after the end of every round is go and look myself in the mirror and say, that's how I want to feel when I play golf. You know, and that if that's my goal for the rest of my career, and I can go after every round and I can look in the mirror and I can say that to myself, then, you know, the results will take care of themselves.
What an unburdening it must have been to complete the career Grand Slam, and almost appropriate that he's a little bit under the weather, considering the ramp up and the release and everything that went into him completing the career Grand Slam.
And it is actually a cold that put him under the weather. It's not the hangover that it would have been if we had actually accomplished something on that scale. He sounds almost as though he did. Do you remember that Friday at Royal Port Rush when he was chasing the making of the cut after a disastrous first round back in the 2019 Open? And it was such an emotional roller coaster that day. And afterwards, Rory McIlroy talked about it as though it was somewhat surprising to him to realize how many people had become invested in his story.
Yeah.
And I think that's something it's become very apparent, certainly on social media and traditional media over the course of the last 10 days, just how many people rode that roller coaster with him on that Sunday at Augusta, and how many people are happy that this story has been accomplished, that the struggle of the narrative, as he put it, has actually reached a happy ending. Because, you know, we could do with an actual positive story in this game and in this world once in a while. And the extent to which he has been invested in by others, I think, is sort of only settling in with him now. I guess when you're at the top of your game, you don't really think about the fan base beyond the normal day-to-day interactions. But finding out the extent to which those people have become emotionally invested in that outcome and are happy to see it, it's got to be kind of a, you know, liberating for him in a way as well.
I think so. But it also begs the question, what's next? What's now when you accomplish something so rare in this game?
Season slam. Now, a couple of days ago, you were saying we have to have a season slam.
Well, I did. And then I thought a little deeper about it. And I thought the closest comparison to what Rory did was what Tiger did, completing the Tiger Slam back in 2001. And what happened after that? Because the thought was, oh, now he's just going to keep on winning majors and blow through the year 2001. And it didn't quite happen that way. You know, went to Southern Hills, finished tied for 12th. Didn't have a top 10 finish for the rest of the major championship schedule. Lytham, T25. Atlanta Athletic Club, T29. So we expected, oh, well, he's never going to lose again, at least for a while. But I think the come down from completing the Tiger Slam may potentially be instructive as we look at Rory McIlroy and what's going to be happening for him potentially in 2025.
We'll certainly just get back into the week-to-week PGA Tour schedule. This is probably the best means to do it. He's in a fairly relaxed environment. He's with a close friend. Mm. It's not obviously a hit and giggle golf, but it's as close as Rory's going to get to that during the course of a season in
right.
team golf with a guy like Shane. I guess we'll have a better sense in 3 weeks from now when we get to Quail Hollow. And I would expect that there's some kind of fall off after it's just kind of an emotional letdown. But you also have to remember that Rory goes into Quail Hollow with a tremendous amount of expectation upon him then, because he's won several times at that golf course as well. That's not going to be any lighter by the time he gets to Portrush for the Open. And maybe it's beneficial that we just heard him talk about the goal that those guys have shared this year, the Ryder Cup at Bethpage. That is something that will keep those guys fueled up, because I think that matters a great deal, the idea of winning in the United States to those guys.
Well, and as far as the lineup of the major championships for Rory for the rest of 2025, I mean, you can't go to a better venue for him to try to win another major championship than a PGA at Quail Hollow. That, of course, will be in May. Meanwhile, the women's game. How about the 54th Chevron Championship? Since the inaugural edition in 1972 and the 43rd to be played since it became a women's major back in 1983. Coverage begins tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. We roll right through this major championship season in the men's and the women's game. See what we have coming up for the rest of the year. Following this week at the U.S. Women's Open at Erin Hills, KPMG Women's PGA Championship, Fields Ranch East at the PGA's new home in Frisco, the Amundi Evian Championship in France, the Royal Porthcawl for the AIG Women's Open in Wales, July into August. With more, let's welcome in Amy Rogers from Houston. Amy, now weather a big factor today on the eve of the championship. What should we know?
Hey there, Damon. Well, thunderstorms were in the forecast in the whole week leading up to this Chevron Championship. And as expected, they showed up here this morning at 9:30 a.m. local time. They blew the horn here, telling players they needed to get off the course due to inclement weather in the area. And then it was at 12:15 that they got another update and finally got the go-ahead to be able to head back out to the golf course. Now, as I made my way from the TV compound to our position where we are now here, just outside the clubhouse, there was quite a bit of standing water that was already accumulating across the club at Carlton Woods. You can see in some of the images here some of the water, particularly in the fairway at 18 and just in front of the green at 18 as well. Now, we are currently between bands right now. The sun's actually popped out a little bit, but we're expected over the course of the day to receive a half an inch to an inch of rain here, and more storms are expected here this afternoon. Now, the forecast is expected to improve over the next couple of days. Now, there's a chance of afternoon thunderstorms Thursday and Friday, with more rain expected, up to potentially another half inch of rain. But Saturday and Sunday look pretty good at the moment, relatively clear. But the course was already pretty soggy to begin with, already playing quite long from what players were saying. So with all this additional rain that we received today and more rain in the forecast for potentially the next 2 days, it's going to play that much longer.
Amy, we've just been having a conversation here about, obviously, Rory McIlroy completing the career Grand Slam. That should be a conversation usually at almost every major championship. Is it a conversation at the Chevron this week? Because it's a little more complicated on the LPGA Tour in terms of what is a Grand Slam.
Yeah, Rory McIlroy actually teased all of us in the media that we'd have nothing to talk about now that he accomplished the career Grand Slam. And on the flip side, we have heard little to nothing about the two players that are in the field here this week at the Chevron Championship that can get it done. Now, that said, there is a little bit of a different definition here in terms of what the LPGA considers when determining whether someone has achieved the career Grand Slam. So let's break it down for you. The LPGA has five major championships, but in terms of achieving the career Grand Slam, their definition states that a player needs to have completed four different major championships. If a player were to complete and win all five different major championships, they would deem that having achieved this super career Grand Slam. So coming into this week's Chevron Championship, Anna Nordqvist and Injee Chun both have a chance to complete the career Grand Slam according to the LPGA's definition, because they've already won 3 different major championships and would just need to win here on Sunday to complete that. Now, the LPGA says that they currently recognize 7 players as having completed the career Grand Slam. The last to do it was NB Park back in 2015. There are a total of 4 active players on the LPGA that can complete the career Grand Slam this season. You already heard about Nordqvist and Chun. Also, Lydia Ko and Yanni Sen could also complete the career Grand Slam this year, but they already won here at the Chevron Championship, so they can't get it done here this week. And there remains only 1 player who has accomplished the super career Grand Slam, and that is Kari Webb. Guys.
Amy Rogers reporting from a soggy Houston, Texas on this Wednesday. And listen, I got to go here. I don't see it as a slam, a career slam. 4 to 5. Wonderful achievement.
Yeah.
Baseball, you clear all the bases. You got to get all 5. When there were 4 majors and you got 4, okay. And there are 5 majors and you have 4, not doing it. Not doing the Oprah Winfrey meme. You get a car, you get a car, you get a slam, and you get a slam. No. 5 majors in the modern LPGA, you got to win them all. That's my opinion.
This is, I guess, speaks to the economic realities in women's sport. The Evian was elevated to major championship status because it was the biggest purse in the game. It was purely a commercial decision. And in doing that, the LPGA Tour has absolutely distorted the historical merits of a Grand Slam. And it's left it borderline unattainable for most players. I get the reality of why it's happened and it's set up that way. But to me, it actually diminishes the idea of a Grand Slam and what is actually attainable for the best women players in the world. I guess it's just the economic realities of how the tour has been forced to operate over the years.
4 to 5, 80%. And I think it would diminish the achievement that Rory had. I don't think that Anna Nordqvist or Inji Chun would have the same level of nerves in getting 4 out of 5 as opposed to getting 4 out of 4.
Yeah, I think it's an entirely different ballpark that these players have been put in here. I do think that if anybody ever gets to that 5, okay, great, they'll be lauded for
yes,
a great achievement. But what happens if the day comes when Evian decides that they're not really invested in golf anymore? Does that, and that tournament, if it went away, which isn't likely with the other majors, which have a great historical record to them, that's the challenge that comes with making commercial decisions that may be necessary, but they also do tend to distort the history of the game a little bit.
And Kari Webb, by the way, has 5 Super Slam, one of the most underrated players in the history of our game.
Well, the PGA Tour Commissioner, Jay Monahan, has also been meeting with the media this morning in New Orleans. We're going to hear what he has to say. That's coming up next. Here's how you can watch coverage of the Chevron Championship. Coverage begins Thursday at 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Golf Channel, and again at 6 to 8 p.m. Same again on Friday. Then on the weekend, it's 3 to 6 p.m. on NBC both days. And we're joined now by my Golf Week colleague, Beth Ann Nichols, who has been rained out in Houston this morning, but she's still covering the tournament. Beth Ann, we just had Amy Rogers on. We're having a discussion about how the Grand Slam notion transfers, I guess, from what we've been talking about on the PGA Tour over to the LPGA Tour and how the LPGA chooses to define a Grand Slam. Do you think it's become confused or muddied or in any way distorted by how the LPGA Tour is now treating the idea of a Grand Slam?
Yeah, I think it's been confusing for, you know, the better part of a decade since NB Park, you know, won the AIG Women's Open. And it was like, well, wait a second, she won the Evian before it was a major. So is this the career Grand Slam or not? Because she's won the Evian, but it wasn't a major. So, you know, I personally think, unfortunately, you have to win all 5. And I say unfortunately, because that just makes it all the more difficult for anyone to accomplish such a rare feat. So, you know, the LPGA obviously recognizes only 7 players, a short list. And I think for fans, it's really confusing. And you know, I also think that, you know, it's controversial whether or not the Evian should have ever become a major. You know, I personally think that at that point in time, you know, so many majors were question marks in terms of the future of what was the LPGA championship going to look like. At that point, the RNA wasn't involved with the British Open, you know, so I understand why Mike Wan did what he did, but it has definitely confused things for a lot of folks.
I'm right with you, Beth Ann. This is tippy top historical stuff. It should be difficult. I believe you have to win them all as well. That's exactly what Rory McIlroy did at the Masters, completing the career Grand Slam, the sixth man ever to do so. How transcendent was it? How many LPGA folks were paying attention and watching what Rory did?
Well, I was surprised to learn that Nelly Korda didn't watch any of it. I guess she was really focused on her own game. But Lydia Ko, who of course has made this one of her next goal, watched it all. She watched it while the front nine, while she was playing golf, and then she watched the back nine. And as it went into overtime, she had a nail appointment. She made sure that she got to watch the playoff while she was getting her nails done. Said she shed some tears. It was really emotional for her watching Rory accomplish this goal. And she said, while it's not the same, it reminded her of the emotional release that she felt in Paris after she won the Olympics and got that final point that put her into the LPGA Hall of Fame. So, you know, Lydia, she needs two more to get to the five. She needs to win the KPMG Women's PGA and the U.S. Women's Open. And I asked her a while back, do you think you need one or two to achieve the career Grand Slam? And she said she thinks she needs to win them all. The more, the merrier.
Love that. Love hearing it in her perspective. And obviously, she's a past champ at Chevron. How is her health, though, going into the first major of the season?
Well, she had a freak thing happen. You know, she woke up on Sunday and had a neck spasm. And she said that the pain went down her right arm. She has a lot of tingling sensation still. She wasn't able to practice on Monday. She did play nine holes in the Pro-Am on Tuesday. I said, has this ever happened to you before? And she said, yeah, actually, when I was playing in an Aramco event on the LET, same thing, a lot of numbness in her right arm at that point. She's hopeful that it'll be all clear by Thursday. But she said she was really concerned about developing any bad habits. You know, she's like, not just for this week, but for beyond. She's hitting the ball well. Her swing looks good. She didn't want to compensate in ways that might damage her long term.
There's another issue that's sort of come up this week as a talking point, Beth Ann, which will surprise an awful lot of golf fans out there. The tour has kind of reminded players of how to conduct themselves during Pro-Ams, and there are obviously Pro-Ams in four of those five majors, but the idea that players should not be concentrating too much on their own practice games, but should actually be focused on the clients that they're with. That's going to seem outrageous to a lot of golf fans, that they're telling players to prioritize shilling for sponsors rather than actually getting their games in shape for a major championship.
Well, Eamon, I think much like your earlier point of it shows the state of the tour having five majors, I think this is where the LPGA is. And you know, I think Nelly Korda actually brought it up in her press conference, mentioning that the regulations had changed and she wouldn't be able to practice. Well, they actually didn't really change. They fine-tuned the language a little bit to say, oh, yeah, you can't chip either, because players were just thinking, oh, I can take some extra putts if I'm not holding up play. I can chip too. But the reality is it's no practicing at all, except for a few extra putts if there's time. But, you know, this goes to speeding up play, that the Pro-Am rounds are becoming dreadfully long. So that's not enjoyable for anyone. But also, to your point of entertaining the check writers, you know, Stacey Lewis said to me, she's known for a long time that the most important day of the week is the Pro-Am day. She said, but this current group of players, they don't see it that way. They see this as an extended practice round, which it is not. And the reality is there are a lot of future check writers playing in LPGA Pro-Ams too. And that could even be for a player personally, not just, you know, as a potential presenting sponsor or title sponsor. So players can actually, you know, benefit from paying a little bit closer attention to the amateurs in their group. But really this goes back to the heart of what the LPGA has been, the bread and butter of the tour for decades, that they have always been known as the approachable tour, you know, that you're going to have a good time during an LPGA Pro-Am. And this is the tour's way of reminding them that, hey, we've got to get back to this, and we're going to start fining you if you're caught doing otherwise.
Which would seem to make sense, I guess, on the week-to-week LPGA Tour product. It just seems slightly strange to have that as a caveat in a major championship preparation as well.
Well, I mean, when we look at where the players make the most money, most of the investment on the LPGA has been in the majors. So I would actually argue that it's probably even more important during the major to make sure that you're shaking the hands and you're making eye contact and making sure that these folks are having a good time. It's unfortunate that, but that is where we are. I think that's just a reality check that even though the LPGA, you know, has raised their purse significantly in recent years, this is still a must do.
Do you think the players are comfortable for the most part with that, having four of the five majors have pro-ams? Is it kind of baked into the cake? You know what you're signing up for? Because I would think that those weeks are sacrosanct. They are about chipping and putting and knowing where to hit it, knowing where to miss it, and making sure you are as finely tuned as possible, and maybe save the conversation for a Monday or Tuesday dinner.
Yeah, no, players have never liked this. I mean, I remember a player getting DQ'd at the old Kraft Nabisco for being late to her tee time in a pro-am. So, you know, I mean, unfortunately, it's something that you have to do, but I don't think any generation particularly wants to do it. It's just some generations maybe understand the importance of it right now for where they are. But look, as they continue to elevate and become, you know, more household names and become more well-known, you know, outside of golf as athletes in the greater sports landscape, maybe this won't be something that you have to do down the road. I mean, the good news is that they only had to play 9 holes this week. The bad news is that the last tee time yesterday was 5:10. I did a double take on that. I was like, holy smoke, somebody's teeing off in a pro-am round at 5:10. That was unfortunate.
Let's talk about the reason why you're sitting in a room with those stylish hotel curtains behind you, Beth Ann. Obviously, a lousy weather day out there in Houston. What kind of impact, or who is most likely to be impacted by this kind of loss of a half day out there? Because a lot of the field would have spent Monday as a travel day coming from LA, right? So the practice time has been pretty limited.
Yeah, well, you've got 26 players who are making their debut in this event. So you've got a lot of players who are trying to have a crash course here on a difficult setup. So I think, you know, yes, even for world number one, Nelly Korda, right? She didn't arrive until, you know, Monday afternoon. It's not easy to get from LA to Houston. It's not like they're arriving on private jets. You know, they're taking commercial flights. They've got to, you know, collect their luggage and make their way here. And she had the champions dinner that evening. And so she didn't actually get out to see the golf course until late in the afternoon on Tuesday for her 9-hole pro-am in which she couldn't practice. So she planned to play 18 today, which, you know, is unusual for her during a major. And I don't think that's going to happen. So you're looking at the top of the top struggling with it. Then you have Ingrid Lindblad, who's just coming off a victory. Madeline Sagstrom, you know, fellow LSU player, recently won as well, gives her, I think, good advice. Take Monday off. Don't touch a club. You know, rest. It takes a lot out of you to win, right? But then I wonder, how many holes did she get in today? How much is she going to be able to see all 18 holes before she tees off tomorrow? I'm not sure. We'll see what happens with the weather and what she can do. But, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of blood pressure rising here.
No doubt about that. Hopefully the sun comes out for the best players in the world and for you as well, Beth Ann. We appreciate the time. Have a great week.
Thank you. Always enjoy it.
All right, a couple guys who know how to play in the rain. Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry. Rory making his first start since completing that career Grand Slam. Back to defend his title in New Orleans with his buddy Shane Lowry. They're going to sing again in 2025 like they did 1 year ago. Rex Hoggard with more on the dynamic duo.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're continuing on Golf Today. Earlier this month, Madeline Sagstrom won the T-Mobile Match Play for her first LPGA victory in more than 5 years. She capped the week with a one-up win over Lauren Cochran in the final.
And tell you what, man, just last week at the JM Eagle LA Championship, she recorded the first hole-in-one of the 2025 LPGA season. Take a look at this ball. Bounce, bounce, and in. Par 3, 9th hole, en route to a bogey-free 7-under 65 for Madeline. About her best major finishes, building a strong resume short of victory so far. T2, T4, T11, T12, and T13 a couple of years ago at the Chevron, and recently sat down with our Amy Rogers.
Madeline, you're back in the winner's circle this year after 5 long years. What has the reaction been like to your win?
Oh, it's been so nice. Like, everyone has been so nice, even maybe nicer than I thought people would be. And everyone seems to, I think people really, they know what's going on behind the scenes. Like, they know I've been out here for a long time, and it's hard. I mean, as hard as it is to win one time, it's just trying to do it again. It's just been crazy. My phone has been flooding. I probably have felt more a bit of relief and be like, finally, like, I could do it. You know, like, there's so much. I mean, we play week in and week out, and just, like, the doubt that pops up in your head, like, am I going to do this again? Am I good enough? Da-da-da-da-da. So for me, it was like, yes. Like, I finally did it, and it was really, really important because it was Shane's first LPGA Tour win, so he's committed his last 4 years of his life to my life, so I was like, yes, I got to do it, not just for me, but for him too.
What kept you working through those doubts and through the tough times when the wins weren't coming to try and get to that point?
I've always loved golf. I do love the struggle of it, because you always know that, I always know that bad things are going to turn to good things, and good things are also unfortunately going to turn to bad things. Like, it is an never-ending circle. So it's I knew that there is still a lot of good golf in there, even though I'm getting older. Like, things are changing. Maybe my priorities have changed a little bit over the years, but I just really felt like I had more good in me, so I wanted to give this. We've probably been talking, I kind of keep saying I'm on the back nine of my career, so we've been saying, like, let's give this a full chance, like, see if I can really get there again, and if I can't, I can't, but we've been working really hard this offseason, and I'm just really so happy that I pulled it off.
With getting another win now, does that make you want to double down and maybe play a little bit longer in your career, or where is golf right now in your life as a priority?
It's still number one. It is still number one. And I've kind of always said, until, like, I have family in the back of my mind, and until something else becomes more important, this is still it. But it gives a little bit more certainty. Like, I can plan my schedule a little bit better. I might not have to wear myself out, because, I mean, recovery is different. Like, I'm 32, so it's different than when I was 22. So I think that having that is a very big luxury. Didn't take as long of an off season away from the golf clubs this year. So kind of have that mentality, go home a little bit more, be at your own house. It's lovely. It's such a great recovery, and it's a super luxury to have out here. So it just brings a lot of certainty and peace of mind.
How does that impact how you approach the major championships?
Well, of course, playing well gives confidence. People always like, how do you become confident? It's like, well, you play good golf. Like, that's normally how it works. Like, I don't really believe in fake it until you make it. It's figure out the game and get there. And I mean, I feel really good. My driver has been really solid the last couple events. Even in Phoenix, I hit the driver really well. So I know that it's a big ball striking course. So you have to hit it well off the tee too. There's some shots you might want to turn both ways. So it's a great golf course, and I'm looking forward to kind of going back there. I've played decent before, but going back there with my game in a little bit better place, because I love the layout. It suits my eye very well. I'm a good putter, so if I can just get on the green and the right amount of shots, I think it's good.
What are some lessons that you'd like to implement?
We've always talked about acceptance in playing golf, and I think that I've had a hard time being in the moment. And then when you play match play, even if you make triple bogey, it doesn't matter. Like, you might lose a hole, you win the hole, it doesn't matter, because then you always start over in the next tee box. So I think that obviously that triggers something inside of my body and my mind, and I don't linger so much on making a bad swing or making a bad score, while when I play stroke play sometimes I take that with me. So I'm like, well, what I did on 5 over there wasn't good enough, or that contact on that 8-iron was bad, or I missed that, but, you know, I drag it a little bit too much. But then in match play, I kept saying to Shane, I was like, well, that wasn't great, but that's over. Okay, let's try to make a birdie now. So it was much more in the present and much more letting go of the past.
That's an interesting mindset. Do you feel like that would help you in major championships?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just watching Rory at the Masters, I mean, he did not have a good start. Started with double bogey, and it would be easy to kind of fall apart or start questioning your game. But I think that it obviously helped his nerves. I think, like, okay, well, I still need to go and have a good game today and play well. And I think that is, like, if you can learn how to let go of the bad or even the good, if you can, like, okay, I've made 3 birdies in a row, now keep going for it, rather than be like, oh, I want to save this. You know, I think that is huge. I think that The people that are really good at letting go and just like, next shot, okay, what are we doing here? Next shot. I think those are the ones that are very consistent and score very good over a period of time.
You got an opportunity to play Augusta National Golf Club, where we just saw Rory McIlroy win. You got to play there for the very first time. How different was it watching the Masters this year, having played the course?
Oh, it was wonderful. Like, I'd been before just watching, but actually having walked the fairways, like, I was there on 7. That's a tough shot from, you know, like, it was really fun. So my husband Jack and I got to go and play together. So it was really cool. It was a whole different experience, though. I was super grateful for the opportunity. Probably a bit of the part of my life where I prioritize different, like, having the opportunity to go there. I was like, I'll drop anything to go play Augusta National. So it's like, oh, it was cool because I could, like, I felt like, oh, I've been there, I've done that. Oh, I made that putt. That putt doesn't break as much as you think. You know, some of those things. It was fantastic.
Well, now that you're already a winner this season, what are your goals now with the season going forward?
Keep building momentum. I've been doing, like I said, been doing really good things in the off season and just kind of keep building it. I feel very comfortable where I'm at. It's obviously not all there. It will never be all there, but kind of keep shaping up the little things. Been putting really well, so I just need to keep giving myself chances to putt well. And like I said, the driver has been something we worked for a long time with my coach Hans and Callaway, and just trying to find a tool that is gonna help me. And it's been so good, and I feel so much more comfortable standing over the tee, like knowing that I can hit it almost as hard as I can and it's gonna go straight. So it's just kind of keep building, like doing the good things, doing the good practice from week in and week out, make sure I have energy, and then just kind of keep running on this flow. I mean, I'm happy, I'm very satisfied, and I'm very pleased at the moment. So just gonna, I mean, it's still gonna be up and down, ups and downs, but just kind of keep going on this run.
It'll be exciting to see how it fits together for you at the Chevron Championship and first major of the year. We appreciate the time.
Thank you very much.
Well, Sagstrom gets her first round underway tomorrow, 9:21 p.m. Eastern Time. She's in the company of the 23 Chevron runner-up, Angel Yin, and Gabby Lopez. We'll be right back.
With more on Team McIlroy / Lowry, welcome in Rex Hager from TPC Louisiana. What should we know, my friend?
Damon, there had been some speculation that maybe Rory wouldn't play this week following that victory at the Masters a week and a half ago. He went home to Northern Ireland, and I think even most people here at TPC Louisiana understood that if he wanted to take some time off and celebrate what was a career accomplishment, most people understood that. But after talking with Rory this morning, following his victory last year with Shane, it meant the world to him, and it was clear skipping this event was never in the cards.
Yeah, it was just pretty cool. I mean, to win on the PGA Tour is amazing, but like to do it with a close friend, we said it last year, is very, very special. I think this tournament is kind of unique on tour, where it's like that. You can come play here with one of your friends and compete at the highest level. So we had a great time doing it last year, and I'm delighted we're back here this year, and we're obviously hoping to do the same.
Rory, you talk about you two making good partners. Is it just because of the close friendship, or is there more to it than that?
I think, you know, being so close and being able to be really honest with each other, I think, is a good thing. But I think our games complement each other really well, too. I think, you know, the way this golf course sets up, I think it's pretty evident, especially in the foursomes, that, you know, Shane hits off the odds, I hit off the evens. And, yeah, I think our games work well together, especially in this format and the way this golf course sets up. So I'd say it's a little bit of both, but you know, I think when you're out there, being with someone that you're super comfortable with is a big help.
You talked on Sunday at the Masters about how your emotions evolved from relief to joy. You've had like a week and a half now. How have your emotions evolved?
Just grateful. Just so thankful that I'm in this position in life, and not many people can set their minds to a dream or a goal at 8 years old and, you know, at 35 be able to achieve it. So, and then just super thankful with the people that I have around me, my family, my wife, my daughter, my parents, my friends, I think the big thing over the last week has just been just so grateful to, the people that have been with me on this journey and being able to share it with them.
You've gone home to Northern Ireland before after victory. Did this time feel different?
Yeah, it did. You know, it was really nice to see my parents. You know, really nice to be there with Erica and Poppy, see Michael Bannon, who's been my lifelong coach, spend a bit more time with Harry and his wife and just talk about the entire week, and not just the week, but the entire, you know, journey up until that point. So, yeah, it felt different. I tried to make it very low-key and just tried to be with the people that I really wanted to be with. And, you know, I'm sure we'll head back there later in the year and have a bit more of a party, but it was really nice to go back and spend a little bit of time with the people I really wanted to.
Shane, you guys are coming back here to defend, but there was a moment on Sunday at Augusta that you didn't think it was going to happen. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, well, I was playing, obviously, and I was out there. I was only 30 minutes ahead of Rory on the course, and I said to my caddy walking down one hole, I think Rory had just doubled 13, and I said, either way, I think we're going to struggle to get him to New Orleans. So I'm happy he's here. We need to get him to the range now, hit some balls, and we get on with the week. But yeah, it's good to be here. I'm thrilled for what he's after achieving. I've seen what he's gone through over the last number of years, and yeah, it's going to be an exciting week.
Now, Rory said congratulations poured in from across the sports world and beyond. And the example that he gave me, he said he got a phone call of congratulations from not one but two U.S. presidents. He said the first came Monday following that victory on Sunday at the Masters about 3 p.m. local time from former President Obama. He wanted to congratulate him for what he accomplished. He said the next call came a few hours later, and he actually missed that phone call, but he knew something was up when he looked at his phone and saw he'd missed a call from Washington, D.C. He immediately called back, was connected to the White House switchboard, and he said he spent a good amount of time on the phone with President Trump talking about the card. They essentially went shot by shot, hole by hole of that final round, so you get an idea of how that resonated.
Rex, speaking of people who are in conversations with President Trump these days, the commish is in the bayou this week as well. Jay Monahan, what did you learn from his public activities this morning?
It was interesting talking with Jay this morning, and specific of how this tournament fits into the tour schedule. This is the only team event on the tour schedule, and I think it's important to look at this event as sort of how the tour moves forward with different formats. We've talked a lot about the tour wanting to change the format at the Tour Championship, but the one person that I was curious I wanted to talk to was the tournament director here in New Orleans, Steve Worthy, and I talked about some folks who wasn't sure if Rory was going to play. He certainly kept a very close eye on social media the last few days.
Well, I worry about everything, but, you know, certainly it's phenomenal. You know, the success last year, the fact that we knew they had a great time last year played in our favor. It elevated our event to, you know, we've had continued growth over the last 5 years, but that took us to another level. We were well ahead of pace from a sales standpoint this year over last year, and then the win at the Masters just takes us to another level. So, you know, always concerned. Didn't want to put too much pressure on him. I had to tried to stay out of it and let him, you know, get his wits about him after the emotional win. And, you know, thank goodness they're back to defend. And looking forward to them having another great week.
This is an event as a team event that provides an opportunity that you just don't get week to week on the PGA Tour. And when players set their schedule at the beginning of the year, knowing that they can come and play in the Zurich Classic and they, you know, the work that's done to get in position to have your partner commit to you and you commit to your partner is probably one of the better underlying stories that happens each year. And players show up here knowing that this is one, you know, they're playing against a great field. The list of champions that have won here and have won on the team side of it, and to be able to play in a different format for that 1 week, and to do so in a highly competitive but a fun atmosphere, I think has just differentiated this event on the PGA Tour. I think it's perfectly positioned on the calendar, and I think on top of all of it, like what we're talking about here today, and knowing that you've got a great committed global company behind this event, the way that Zurich is and the way that everybody is treated. And all the players are treated, and they just make this for a really special week. And so, therefore, it's an extremely important event on the PGA Tour.
Now, the commissioner was on property today as part of a larger announcement. Zurich signed on as the title sponsor here in New Orleans way back in 2005, and they announced today that they have extended that contract to be title sponsor through 2030. And the commissioner says it's a sign of how important this event is on the PGA Tour schedule.
Jay Monahan to Rory and Shane, Rex Hager with all the big stories from the Zurich Classic in New Orleans. And folks, here's how you can watch coverage of the Zurich this week. Begins tomorrow, 3 to 6 p.m. on Golf Channel. Friday the same, Saturday 1 to 3, and Sunday 1 to 3. Should be a great week. The only team event in the official PGA Tour regular season schedule.
Well, Luke Donald's in the field this week in New Orleans with Camilo Villegas, but he's got another team event on his mind. Luke has been filling out his backroom team for the Ryder Cup. Bethpage Black later this year. We're going to hear more about that right after the break. Continuing here on Golf Today, it was exciting and lucrative conclusion to 2024 for Thailand's Chinnu Thitipul. She won the CME Group Tour Championship at Tiburon Golf Club in November to become the 2024 Race to the CME Globe champion. And that came with a first place check for $4 million, the largest winner's prize in the history of women's golf. And it's quite a career Chinnu has compiled. In just 5 years since she turned professional, she's been the Rookie of the Year on the Ladies European Tour and on the LPGA Tour. She's won the Vert Trophy and has those four LPGA Tour victories. And Chinnu joins us now. Chinnu, thanks for spending some time with us today. We know it's been a shortened day for practice. How is the weather out there impacting your preparation?
Yeah, it just I just woke up so early today for get my like 9-hole practice round done before this suspended, and then just came back from some media and also gonna practice a little bit after this.
Well, you have a tie for fourth on this golf course, a 12th place finish on this golf course as well. Why does it fit your game so well in a short sample so far?
I just think I like the green here and then the like the laid out here pretty much. I mean, it's in a good like condition wise, and also it just suits my eyes when I see things out there on the course.
You've accomplished a lot in just 5 years as a professional, Chinnu. Are you impatient for that major championship victory, or are you happy with the trajectory you're on and you think it's going to come in time?
Yeah, I was just trying to do things like just slowly getting things. I knew that I had been waiting for the major win for some reason, but I just let him solve it by itself, and then just let, if it's time, it's just a matter of time. I just believe that works.
Well, you are so highly accomplished. You're great at golf, but I read a story that when you were a little kid, your dad asked you to choose between golf and tennis. I love both sports, by the way. Was it close? Did you like almost reach for that tennis racket and get the putter instead? Like, what was the decision making for you?
Actually, I don't even have been trying tennis at all. Like when I was young, I just pick up golf right away, and then I was just telling them I like it. I think because when I was young, I don't like to run that much as tennis had. But I mean, now I really get into tennis, which is better. But I'm just glad that I picked golf. If not, I'm not gonna be good in tennis. I'm not gonna be top of the world.
Well, you're pretty close to top of the world in golf right now, Chinnu. When you won the CME Group Tour Championship in November, it was $4 million, the biggest prize in the history of women's golf. Were you able to play that final round without thinking about the money, or was it in your mind just because of how big it was?
Yeah, I'm not thinking about the money at all. I'm just thinking about how to get today done, how to play all 18 holes the way I want it to go, and then it just ended up really like perfectly on 17 and 18.
So you weren't thinking about the money before, but hopefully you thought about it a little bit afterwards. What was the coolest thing you bought? Maybe a new pair of shoes or a flat screen TV or a puppy? What was the most fun thing that you splurged on?
I bought a car in Thailand, the new one, my own one. I bought a couple handbags, just a couple, not too much. and just some a little things, that small things, not big things.
In your last 14 tournaments, Gino, you've had your worst finish is a tie for 12th. That's the only time you've been outside the top 10 in your last 14 tournaments. Mm-hmm. How do you manage to be so consistent week in, week out?
I don't know. I think the most important key, just hit where your caddy want you to go. It should be the like really correct like answer to do. Cause like, you know, if your caddy want you to go there and you get it, which is you good in a good position.
Well, you've been in a lot of great positions in your young career. I'm curious about your attitude. We've listened to you do interviews. You're mm-hmm. always smiling on the golf course. You have a wonderful demeanor as well. How critical is that to your success? Is that kind of how you've always been, or have you worked on your demeanor and character?
I would say both of it. I always trying to do like on the positive side. I think I'm kind of like a funny person as like on and off the courses anyway. So this is what I want to work it on, like also trying to continue working it, because it's had some like times on some points that I'm not really enjoying anything on the course at all, and then the result showing it's not that good and it's not showing like myself 100% performing out there. So I'm just trying to be myself and enjoying things, even all good or bad. I just enjoyed it.
Well, we enjoy watching you play, Gino. Best of luck this week at the Chevron. Hope to visit with you again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Mel Reid has emerged as one of the most refreshing voices in LPGA Tour coverage in the last couple of years, and we can all agree she's a wonderful antidote to that Chambly guy on coverage from live from the Women's Majors. Mel's going to be here in the studio to talk some Chevron after this quick break. Well, last year, world number one Nelly Korda beat Maya Stark by 2 strokes to win the Chevron Championship. That was her second major title, one of many wins in an incredible season. Korda joined Nancy Lopez in 78 and Annika Storenstam in 2004-2005 as the only players to win in 5 straight starts on the LPGA Tour. This is what she's done so far in 2025. Started out pretty strong, second in her very first start. Another top 10, but she hasn't actually finished better than T16 in her last 3 starts. Yesterday, she met with the media.
So first starting out, it ranked world number one once more going into the first major of the year for LPGA. Of course, holding your title from last year here at Carlton Woods. How do you intend to keep the same momentum you had from last year and carry it over into this year?
I would say last year is just last year. This is a brand new year. I mean, what I achieved last year, no one can take that away from me. I'm gonna, that's always gonna be such a great memory, but it's a fresh week and a fresh mindset. And, you know, I just have to kind of put that aside, what I did last year, and know that, you know, the golf course could be playing different. It's a different field. So going out there and preparing, you know, the best that I possibly can, control what I can control and give it my all is all that I can really do.
And then, of course, going into the string line of tournaments you've been going into from the start of the season up until now, and based on how you perform, you know, this week here at Carlton Woods, how do you expect the rest of the season to go for you, not just for your golf game, but also for your mental, especially going into the CMA Group Championship at the end of the season?
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, my mindset every week is one shot at a time, and that's kind of what I've always had. And I'm not going to look too far ahead, and I'm definitely not going to reminisce about the past, because, you know, the past is the past. It's not going to really help me in the future or in the present. So I'm just going to stay very present.
And Nelly gets her title defense started tomorrow, 9:32 a.m. Eastern time, alongside 2023 champ Lilia Vu and 2021 champ UCLA Bruin Patty Tavatanikin. Joined now by LPGA Tour winner and assistant captain of the European Solheim Cup, Mel Reid, doing Golf Central all week. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, speaking of the Solheim Cup, you're one of the rare people who can say, yeah, I've beat Nelly Korda a couple of times.
Yeah, I have. You just reminded me of that. Yeah, thank you very much. I know, I said something a bit cheeky on 18 when we were, I think we were all square. I was playing with Leona, and think I got in her head a little bit, which I quite enjoyed. But, yeah, I mean, she's just a fantastic player, isn't she? Very excited to see what she does this week at Chevron. Look, I think we hold Nelly to such a high expectation. I think the incredible season that she had last year, we just always think she's going to win or she's going to be up there in contention. She's only played, like, 5 events this year. Right. You know, this is where it's a bit weird with Chevron as well, is kind of, like, where it kind of sits in the calendar year, is that there's not that many events leading up to it. But her stroke average, you know, her scoring average is still one of the best. I think it's number one at the minute, 68.13. So, listen, I think she's going to start getting into a groove a little bit more now. She's played more tournaments, and I would not be surprised to see her have a great finish this week at Chevron.
It's a great point on the schedule as well, because if you weren't committed to that month-long swing in Asia, mm-hmm. then you really don't have a lot of warm-up events before the first major. Is she still your favourite this week, or was she your favourite?
Well, it's funny, really. I was looking at this because I know they've obviously changed the venue, you know, to be at the Woodlands the last couple of years. But you always get, like, a cream-of-the-crop winner. And it's not necessarily a golf course that stands out to me as a major golf course. You know, it's not the rough, it's not the tightest. But it's just a very, very strong golf course. And for some reason, you know, you had Lilia Vu, who then went on to be world number one quickly after that. Nelly last year, world number one. And so I think it's going to be a very high-ranked player again this week, which I think is going to be lifting the trophy. Look, I think you can never rule Nelly out. I think with the way that she swings the golf club so beautifully, reason number 99 why I retired, because I just can't keep up with players like that. I would not be surprised at all if we saw a good result from Nelly this week. Whether she'll win or not, I don't know if she's played enough reps. But then again, nobody has.
You know, our Amy Rogers did a piece on Nelly Korda and the team around her, mm-hmm. the coach, the parents, Sebastian, the brother, Jessica, the sister. When you look at Nelly Korda, what stands out to you the most? Is it physical? Is it mental that separates her and makes her such a dominant number one?
Well, this is where I'm going to give Jess a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. Playing a lot of golf with Jess Korda, I think she's really helped influence Nelly. You know, she's really has been an incredible big sister. I think that Nelly's always had, I hate using the word talent because they work so incredibly hard, but she's always had that natural ability to play golf. The whole family is just athletic, right? So what I think that Nelly needed when she first came out on tour was a bit of a stronger head, a more mature mentality. And I think that Jess accelerated that. I think she really did guide her and help her. And I really believe that she's become the player she is. A lot of credit to Jess. But also, you know, with their family, like you've just said, how incredibly talented they are from an athletic standpoint, you've got to give credit to the parents as well and the incredible team that they have built around Nelly. And, you know, she's just, it looks like she's just made to be a world number one athlete in whatever she does. And thank goodness she's chosen golf and we get to watch her every week.
And I guess with Jess, she came with a built-in mentor. And we had Amy Alcott on the show a couple of days ago and she talked about how she'd like to see more of the younger players these days pick the brains of the veterans. Mm-hmm. Whose brain did you pick when you came out? Do you think young players these days do that enough?
It's funny. I did. I picked Laura Davis's brain.
It's a pretty good one to start.
Pretty good one. Yeah, as she was fantastic with me, really took me under her wing. Got Kari Webb, another mentor of mine, was fantastic. Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about this earlier, and well, a lot of us have retired, by the way. A lot of us vets have retired. You know, you look at like a Marina Alex, a Michelle Wee, and Aimee Azzotto. A lot of us have retired, and I think that on the LPGA, our playing careers are kind of cut a little bit short, whether we want to go and have families or do we just get filtered out or whatever it is. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like rookies now, and a lot of these rookies are coming out of, you know, these colleges, and these colleges, I don't know what they're doing, but they're just churning out incredible, like, incredibly rounded golfers. Mm. You know, they're not scared. They have no scar tissue, have no fear. They haven't done tour life yet, so they don't even, you know, they're very innocent to the grind of it all, I guess you should say. And they're just kind of ready for win. And I, you know, I have noticed a slight shift, certainly in the mentality of the players on tour, now that our prize money has increased so much in the last 2 or 3 years, which we have been fighting for, and obviously we welcome it. But it has made the tour a little bit more business-like. It's not quite as what it used to be, where we used to sit and have dinners and chat about things. It's very much like, this is me, this is my team. Players can afford their team out now. They can afford family, friends, parents, whatever it is. And so they kind of just are kept in this bubble. And so, yeah, I think that the old school way of asking for advice on tour from mentors and older players is disappearing, which is a bit of a shame, really, but I guess that's just the new generation now.
Well, you're still plugged into the game. You have a lot of friends out there competing. We had Brittany Lindsay come on a couple days ago. I asked her the question, you know, what do you think about the state of the modern LPGA? There's no commissioner at this time. How do you feel? She's like, well, we've got a lot of great candidates. The, you know, the purses are up. She was very positive about the state of the LPGA. Are you positive?
You're going to get me in trouble here. look, if I'm completely honest, the prize money is sensational. My argument is, like, what do we bring back in? Like, what ticket sales are we doing? What revenue are we bringing back in? You know, the PGA Tour, I'm not here to compare at all, but they do bring a lot of revenue back into the game. You know, they have so many fans at the door. They have so many big championships. And it's just a shame for me that how can we get more people and more eyes on the game, and how do we get more fans through the door to actually watch these incredible athletes? And I think that that's where there's a bit of a gap, which we need to close. I'm not quite sure how we do that. I feel like the way that women's sport, the momentum of women's sport right now, I feel like golf is in a way getting a little bit left behind. And I don't know whether that's a branding, whether we're just not in the conversations, whether we need, I would like to be in the same umbrella as women's sport, and I feel like we're just not, we're doing something that isn't quite getting us there. And I'm not sure what that is. I think there's, you know, there's many, many reasons. I think, you know, I think it needs to be a bit more of an entertainment at events. I think people, the whole community needs to get behind it a bit more. I think visibility, I think we need a lot more visibility and eyes on our game. How do we do that? Investment. So it's a lot of different things. I could talk about it for ages, but that's my opinion on it.
And some of the conversations we've had earlier with Amy Rogers, with Bethann Nichols, is around the idea of where the history and stature of the tour meets that commercial need. And we've talked about how the idea of a Grand Slam has become somewhat distorted in the women's game now, because Evian was elevated because of the prize or the purse a decade ago. And even one of the conversations earlier about the Pro-Am restrictions on the players this week, where they're not allowed to practice during the Pro-Am of a major, because they have to keep things moving for the clients and sponsors around them. What would your attitude be if you were out there? You've played this tournament as recently as 2 years ago. If you were out there and been told on a day that's already been shortened by rain that your practice is further truncated, is that going to make you blow a gasket if you were out there?
Well, the men don't have proams and majors. Yeah. I don't think the women should. Okay, we are obviously in a different situation. We are extremely grateful for the money that we get given in the prize fund, but that comes at a cost, and that comes at things like pro-ams during majors. And quite honestly, I think that there has been a bit of chat about pro-ams. I'm kind of hearing it from you know, the tour, but I've always kind of tried to instill in the rookies and in the players that, listen, you do get your check on Wednesday. You know, just for whatever it is, we have a lot of nine-hole proams now, just suck it up, yeah. You know, be polite and ask questions and get to know your playing partners, right? Make it enjoyable for them, it's their day. But I've always heard very positive feedback from the LPGA and proams, always. Yeah. It's always been, the girls are so engaging, you know, they were great with us. I've never actually heard what I'm hearing now. So I don't know what is going on, but yeah, again, I feel like they're, again, I'll probably get in trouble, but I don't think there should be proams in major championships at all.
No, I agree with you 100%. In this Caitlin Clark era, women's sports, bringing more eyeballs to college basketball, now the WNBA, I was interested in what you said about the gap that we're seeing that hasn't quite transcended to golf. Is it as much as mixed team events in the Olympics? Is it more outreach from the PGA Tour? I'm always a little skittish to ask that question, as if the LPGA needs the PGA Tour's help.
I'm going to say no, I don't think we do.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's their responsibility either, to be quite honest with you. I think that we need to do something from a brand and marketing standpoint that make us as entertaining. And yes, I know golf is very different, you know, it's a much slower sport. It's kind of hard to make it as entertaining as possible compared to like a WNBA, you know, or hockey or something like that. But I certainly think it can be much improved from what it is right now. And I think that branding and getting more people through the door in some way or another would really elevate everything together as one. And then we can be in discussions with other women's sports, which I think we need to, which needs to be happening.
Mel, been wonderful having you at our desk. Looking forward to seeing you on Golf Central pre and post game. Thank you so much for your time. There she is, Mel Reid. Our European theme's going to continue. We're joined by two-time Masters champ Bernhard Langer, who made his final start at the Masters this month, shares his memories from Augusta National right after this break. We're back on Golf Today. What a career at Augusta National for Bernhard Langer. 27 cuts, 9 top 10s, 85. He won by a couple shots over Seve, Ray Floyd, and Curtis Strange. Wasn't done. 1993, won by 4 shots over Chip Beck for his second green jacket. And a lot of us rued this day, but earlier this month, Langer made his 41st and final Masters appearance. Nearly made the cut. There he is with his son, Jason. Walk away on Friday with an incredible resume at Augusta. And so great to have Bernhard Langer with us, World Golf Hall of Fame member. It's great to see you. I have to ask, what was it like trying to play composed, focused golf at the Masters where you were getting standing ovations every 5 minutes?
I know. It was very strange in a way, but very emotional and very nice. I enjoyed having my son Jason with me. And the strange and weird part was coming up 18, I thought I was going to make the cut. So I figured, well, this is not it yet. Well, I'm going to be back tomorrow and Sunday. And as it turned out, I did miss the cut, and it was goodbye.
Even though you missed the cut, Bernhard, you beat a lot of players much, much younger than you. You beat a lot of recent winners on the PGA Tour out there. Were you at all aware, or do you take pride in the fact that even at 67, you're still doing that? Or were you focused very much on your own game, irrespective of who was actually behind you on that leaderboard?
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention who was behind me or who was ahead of me. I was, you know, my goal was to play as good as I could and hopefully make the cut and be there for the weekend. But I did play pretty good those 2 days, and it was just a shame the way it finished on 15 and 18. But that's golf. Not every good shot gets rewarded.
So when you miss the cut of the Masters only by a single shot, it's not as though you're out there embarrassing yourself in any respect with higher numbers. Does it make you think about continuing and playing again? Why walk away now when you're still that clearly competitive?
Well, it's a good question. And, you know, while I was playing and playing well, I was thinking maybe you called it too early. But, then, you know, when I'm hitting driver into 11 into a little breeze and I'm short of the green, I'm going, I think you made the right decision. this course is not designed to be hitting 3 woods and hybrids into greens where these young guys hit 8 and 9 irons.
Well, Bernhard, I read where you're doing a documentary on your life that will air in Germany. What do you hope it conveys?
Well, I hope it will go a lot deeper than, you know, what you guys know about me and what the public knows about me. It will cover my whole life from the very beginning till now. And there's some pretty interesting stuff that has happened in my lifetime. And I think it was worthy to do a documentary. I said no for many years. There were a couple of companies interested in chasing me, and I always said, no, I'm too busy. I don't want to spend all that time. But finally committed to it, and I think it's going to be a nice piece. So it will air in Germany first, and then we'll work on the international part of it in the near future.
Bernhard, you've had such a long career, so many highs in it. You've won, I think, something around 120 tournaments around the world at this stage. But we Irish, we like to focus on the kind of fatalistic stuff. I'm curious, is there one tournament over all those years that you still think about once in a while? You look back on the one that got away from you.
Oh, there's many that got away from me. I mean, talking about Ireland, I remember I was 19 and I was leading the Irish Open, and I had a 2-shot lead with 9 holes to go at Portmarnock. And I hit a beautiful tee shot on 10, and I'm walking off the tee, and I'm thinking, well, what are you going to say at prize giving? I've never given a public speech. So I was thinking about that. And then my next thought was like, what are you going to do with all the money you're going to make, you know, winning the tournament? And you can imagine, you know, half hour later, I wasn't leading anymore, and I didn't win the tournament. So it was just kind of the rookie mistakes you make. But the one that probably hurt the most, you know, was couple of the Open Championships. I should have won one of those. And then I lost a senior Open in a playoff to Mark Wiebe in, forgot now exactly the year, but I had a two-shot lead on 18 and all I had to make was bogey. And I made double bogey. I hit it in the greenside bunker, which is usually not a problem, but it had rained and the bunker was rock hard. And when I hit my sand shot, it bounced off and bladed the ball into the face of the bunker. And anyways, made a double bogey in regulation and then lost in the playoff after three holes or something. So that one lingered a long time.
Well, you've done plenty of winning. We spoke to your fellow World Golf Hall of Fame member, Amy Alcott, earlier this week, who said she wished more players of the younger generation would reach out to her and ask her questions about the game. Do you have a lot of the guys ringing your phone or gals ringing your phone asking for advice? I would think your phone would be ringing off the hook considering the career you have put together.
Well, that's it's a thought. And there's some young guys that have reached out to me, especially around the Masters time. They want to play, you know, practice round or something like that. And just played a practice round with Max Grazeman, who, by the way, is a phenomenal young player. What a talent. He actually comes from the same club as me, from Woodford Country Club in Boca Raton. And I truly enjoyed hanging out with him. And, you know, what happens nowadays is they all have a team. They have great caddies. They have perfect yardage books and good coaches. And they're brought, many of them are brought up in the college system where they're trained at a very young age. They're trained the right things. So they feel like they don't necessarily need to ask some of the older guys who've been around for years and years because they get all that information from all different sources.
But you certainly didn't have the luxury of a team around you when you turned professional at the age of 15, Bernhard. I want to try some trivia with you. Do you recall exactly where your first official start was on the European Tour all the way back 1974?
Oh, that one. Well, you know, officially I started in 76 and that would have been the Portuguese Open. But I did try and Monday qualify a few times and it would either be the Swiss Open, the Italian Open or the German Open, you know, before 76. But in 76, I joined the tour full time and that was the Portuguese Open. So which one was it in 74?
It was the Swiss Open followed by the German Open the next week.
Okay.
You did miss that both makes cuts, but it's been a heck of a ride since then.
Yes, it has. Lots of ups and downs.
Bernhard, we could talk to you all day. It's great to see you back on PGA Tour Champions. Congratulations on your incredible career, not just at the Masters, but throughout the world of golf. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you guys for all that you do for the game of golf.
There he is, World Golf Hall of Fame member, Bernhard Langer. Wow. I mean, 67 years of age, 47 wins on PGA Tour Champions, nearly made the cut.
More than 120 around the world. I mean, Bernhard's first start on the PGA Tour was at Firestone, where the seniors will play a senior major later this year. That was all the way back in 1981.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was 1972 when Bernhard joined the paid ranks in this game at just the age of 15. He does have a remarkable run of history. And he talked about joining the tour officially in 1976. He did play the Open Championship that year. That was also the last Open that Gene Sarazen was ever in the field for. So, and when I made this point during the Masters, you know, he played at the Masters against kids who were 20 years old. He basically has competed against guys born a century apart. I mean, he really is connective tissue in this game between generations.
And I think he was being complimentary of young players who have it together, that have these college programs that bring them out to the professional game. They have
teams.
You can
still learn a lot from a guy.
I mean, couldn't you learn from a five-time major champ like Amy Alcott or a two-time Masters? I'd want to be a sponge. And good for Max Grazeman, by the way, for playing that practice round.
Yeah, and you look at the relationship between, say, Rory McIlroy and Brad Faxon. I've always believed that relationship isn't so much about the technique of putting. It's situational. It's places that Rory McIlroy is going to find himself in tournaments where Brad Faxon knows exactly what's that like. And there is value to that kind of institutional knowledge.
Ray Floyd to Fred Couples to Joe Highsmith. This game continues to go on and on. This was a lot of fun. Enjoy your Wednesday.